The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. This evening, we continue our Bringing America Back to Life series. Tonight, we will feature a presentation from our 2024 convention. Our speakers' ideas will inspire you with principles, experiences, and wisdom as they join us to pave the way back to life through prayer, action, voting, and education. I am pleased to introduce Stephen W. Mosher, an internationally recognized authority on China and population issues, and an acclaimed author and speaker. He has worked tirelessly since 1979 to fight coercive population control programs and has helped hundreds of thousands of women and families worldwide. In 1979, Stephen was the first American social scientist to visit mainland China. He was invited there by the Chinese government, where he had access to government documents and witnessed women being forced to have abortion under the new one-child policy. Some abortions he witnessed were late term. Mr. Mosher was a pro-choice atheist at the time, but witnessing these traumatic abortions led him to reconsider his convictions and become a practicing pro-life Roman Catholic. Stephen has appeared numerous times before Congress as an expert on the world population, China, and human rights abuses. He has appeared on numerous TV and news shows and is a regular guest on talk radio shows nationwide. He has authored the best-selling A Mother's Ordeal, One Woman's Fight Against China's One-Child Policy, along with many other books, including his most recent, Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the greatest ongoing pro-life conference in America. I've spoken at all of them, so I think I know whereof I speak. Congratulations to Molly Smith and all the wonderful people at Cleveland Right to Life for an amazing event year after year after year. I myself am so looking forward to all the speakers, culminating in my old friend Raymond Arroyo in a couple days, that I'm going to be here the entire conference to be with you all and hopefully get to know a lot of you better. I have, over the last year, gotten to know the late Chairman Mao Zedong much better than I would have liked. I was asked by Tan Books to write the second in a series of books about the devil and communism. The first book was by Paul Kenger of Grove City College. He wrote a book called The Devil and Karl Marx. And they said, we'd like you to write a book about the devil and Chairman Mao. Well, I did hesitate. I knew that Chairman Mao was an evil man. But my goodness, spending the last year writing about this man, every time I finished a writing session, before I went into my writing session, I prayed St. Francis de Sales, the patron saint of Catholic writers. And after finishing reading about him, I had to go take a shower. Evil is about in the world. And if Chairman Mao is not the most evil man in human history, he's certainly right up there. The Alexander Solzhenitsyn once said that within the philosophical system of Marx and Lenin, at the heart, very heart of their philosophy, hatred of God is their principal driving force. And it is. And hatred of God necessarily means hatred of life. of human life. Because God, of course, created life, created the souls that we all are blessed to possess that will serve us not just in this life, but enable us to be with God in heaven forever. Marx and Lenin and all their followers, including Mao Zedong, rejected the idea of the soul, rejected the idea of God, and embraced evil. And evil always leads to death. In fact, the greatest victory, I think, of the devil, who can create nothing, is, of course, the destruction of souls. The second greatest victory of the devil, who can create nothing, is the destruction of human bodies. And that's what happens during an abortion. There's no country that's had more abortions, I think, over the last 40 years than China because of the one-child policy. 400 million abortions, to be exact, under the one-child policy. And, you know, today, 7 years after the one-child policy ended, and at a time when the Chinese Communist Party is now desperate to raise the birth rate, abortions continue. There are more abortions in China now every year than there are live births. So the country has doomed itself to depopulation, again, as a result of Chairman Mao. So what I'm going to do is take you through, briefly, the life of the most evil man who ever lived, one of the most evil men who ever lived. And it's interesting to me that while Karl Marx actually wrote poems to the devil as a young man and seems to have almost consecrated himself to the devil early in life, which, of course, would explain a lot of his later behavior, so Chairman Mao, as a toddler of 3 years old, was taken by his mother outside their native village in Hunan province to a local stone monolith that had a spring at the base that was regarded by the local people as being possessed by a spirit. And she baptized him there in that spring, made him kowtow to the spirit of the rock. She actually named him at that time. She named him the third son of the monolith, the third son of the stone. Now, you might say that's just a harmless cultural practice. I don't think we, being Christians, understand that any behavior like that, any rite like that, any ritual like that is harmless, because it opens one up to diabolical influence, diabolical infestation. And looking at Mao's life, every time he came to a fork in the road, every time he came to a position where he was forced to make a moral choice, he almost invariably chose evil. And if he could achieve his end by telling the truth or by telling a falsehood, he would always deceive. That was his fallback position. Deception was his bread and butter. Mao, of course, in writing the book, it was hard to know how to tell his story because I didn't want it to turn into a biography. So basically, I examined Mao's life from the standpoint of the Ten Commandments, each of which he failed to abide by greatly. And of course, he rejected God at the beginning of his life. He said that he was like a monk wandering about the world with a leaky umbrella. Well, that's a Chinese metaphor for saying, well, I am without God and without the law. Wu fa wu tian. He was without God. He rejected human law and God's law, which is written in every human heart. He once said, as a young man, he said, there are other people in the world and other things, but they only exist for me, for my pleasure. And so he treated human beings, the mass of the Chinese people, like a disposable commodity. Sort of like the population control movement does in the world today, sort of like Planned Parenthood does, right? They treat human beings like a disposable commodity. Little sons and daughters of Eve are being consigned to death in the abortuaries of our country every day. But Mao believed that was the right approach to take, that only he mattered, no one else did. Mao was fond of using various deceits like killing with a borrowed sword. He often sent his enemies within the Chinese Communist Party, who had military forces, he would send them into battle, hoping that they would be killed by Chiang Kai-shek's nationalists, saving him the trouble. He did the same thing in the Korean War. He let us kill 250,000 Chinese soldiers in the Korean War. You remember the Korean War, where the North invaded the South, was thrown back by MacArthur and the United Nations forces led by the United States. And then as we approached the Yalu River, on the verge of conquering all of Korea and unifying it under a democratic regime, the Chinese Communist Party, under the leadership of Chairman Mao, sent human waves of attackers across the border to drive the American forces back. People don't know that those human waves were all recently surrendered nationalist soldiers that Chairman Mao didn't trust because they'd fought on the other side during the long 15-year Chinese Civil War. And what he was doing was killing with a borrowed sword. He was allowing us to kill his potential enemies within China. That's the kind of man we're talking about. As soon as Mao came and conquered an area during the Communist Revolution, the first thing he would do is ransack the church, if there was a Catholic church in the vicinity. And remember, during the time of the Chinese Civil War, there were 5,000 Catholic priests, Protestant missionaries in China. There were hundreds of young men, Chinese young men in seminaries that had been set up all over China in the south, in Shanghai, up north, in Beijing. The church was growing and thriving. The first thing that Chairman Mao's forces would do is they would ransack the church, they'd steal the silver, they'd steal the chalice, and they'd occupy the church because it was usually the best building in the vicinity and turn it into the Communist Party headquarters, turning the priest out or sending him back to his native country if he was a foreigner. That was just the beginning of Chairman Mao's war on religion. The hatred of God drove him in the early 1950s to arrest and imprison thousands and thousands of Catholics and other Christians in China. He was trying to exterminate the church overnight. He couldn't, of course, because God strengthened those who were arrested and put in prison. In one sense, one formerly imprisoned a Catholic told me, being in prison was just all that did was free me for a life of prayer. I was able to talk to my fellow prisoners about the gospel and share the message. But the war continued in 1958 with the establishment of the Three Patriotics Church, the official church controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, which everyone was required to join. Many didn't. So the famous Cardinal Kong, Cardinal Ignatius Kong, was arrested, spent the next 23 years in prison, along with many, many of his fellow Christians. The Legion of Mary came under particular attack because Communist Party propaganda said the Legion of Mary was a paramilitary organization. Now, I've been at a Legion of Mary meeting, and I didn't see any evidence that they were a paramilitary organization, except the rosary, of course, that everyone carried. But the war on the Catholic faith in China continues today. But Chairman Mao started it and made many, many martyrs in China. My next book will be on the Catholic martyrs in China that Mao killed. Other things that China did, of course, was that Communist Party leaders led by Chairman Mao did, was they even betrayed their closest comrades. Some of you may remember that the longtime premier for Chairman Mao when he was chairman of the Chinese Communist Party was a man named Zhou Enlai. Mao never trusted Zhou Enlai or anyone who was close to him, regardless of how long they had worked together in common cause. And so when Zhou Enlai developed bladder cancer in the early 1970s, Chairman Mao forbid the doctors from treating it because he wanted to make sure that Zhou Enlai died before he did. And so he let his longtime comrade die an agonizing death from bladder cancer, which later spread to the pancreas and other parts of his body, in lieu of allowing him to be treated. But it's probably Mao's mistreatment of women and girls that really stands out in my mind. Mao was married again and again and again. He had four wives, each of which he abandoned in turn. His first wife and three children he abandoned when he went into the hills in the 1930s to launch a guerrilla war against the nationalist government. His wife was arrested and later executed, first wife. But over the years, he took many, many concubines. Mao Zedong was an avid reader of Chinese history, and when he was in his 60s, he read that an ancient Chinese emperor had achieved immortality by sleeping with 1,000 virgins. And so at that point, he began to have his Secret Service policemen bring in young girls from villages for overnight stays in his villa in Beijing, again and again and again. And, you know, I thought about calling in the book these young women concubines, but, you know, in Chinese history, a concubine had an official status. The emperor had the empress, of course, and then he had 2 or 20 or 200 concubines. But they were taken into the Forbidden City. They were cared for. They were given shelter and food and promised that the emperor would take care of them for their entire life. Mao behaved even worse than the emperors. He used these young girls, and then he just threw them away, sent them back to their native village. So that is the person who founded the People's Republic of China, on the idea that communism was going to make everyone equal. Well, it made Chairman Mao very rich and everyone else for a long time very poor. Because even from the beginning, Chairman Mao had the best of everything. He had, during the days in Yan'an, when he was carrying out a guerrilla warfare in the late 1930s and 40s against the nationalists, he had several villas that he would go to. He didn't live in a cave like everyone else. He lived in a very expensive apartment with guards, security guards and chefs and of course, a constant stream of women. So he was, as I say, a violator of all the commandments. Thou shalt not steal, he stole from, well, he stole the very lives of the Chinese people. He stole the very culture and history of the Chinese people. Thou shalt not commit adultery. He's probably the poster boy of someone who was a lifelong adulterer. Thou shalt not have strange gods before you. He worshipped only himself, probably the strangest god of all. But it's in his mass murders, I think, that Mao Zedong really stands out in human history, because Chairman Mao is the greatest mass murderer in human history. He killed, in his various purges and pogroms and persecutions, probably 100 million Chinese. The biggest death toll came in the famine after the Great Leap Forward in the early 1960s. He had tried to force everyone into communes and at the same time destroy the family. Remember that Marxism, Leninism, and its current guises of cultural Marxism and progressivism and all of the other isms that we see now blossoming in the United States always hate the family. And, of course, they hate life. Mao hated the family. When he forced everyone into the communes, he separated the men and women from each other. The married men were to live in one dormitory. The married women were to live in another. All the children would be cared for in government nurseries, where they could be educated from a very small age into being willing servants, slaves, serfs of the state. That was a direct attack on the family. In fact, Mao was thinking about, at one point in time, dehumanizing the people of China so much that they wouldn't have names anymore. He thought about giving everyone a number, you know, like in Les Miserables, when the prisoners didn't have names, they only had numbers, 24601, right? But he didn't go quite that far. But his program to communize the country and force everyone into huge agricultural communes devastated the economy and led to the deaths of 50 million people in China. That was his biggest killing spree, but there were others, a million here, a million there, 5 million here, 10 million there. Pretty soon you're talking about real numbers, 100 million. And, of course, he was also the originator, in a sense, of the one-child policy. Now, he died in 1976, and you say the one-child policy didn't begin until 1980 when I was in China. Well, that's true. But don't forget that back in 1958, it was Chairman Mao who declared that the government should control reproduction in the same way that it controls production. He said, in the same way that we have a department controlling the production of steel and the production of coal, we should have a population department to control the production of human beings, you see. So the idea behind the one-child policy, the idea that the government should be in charge of not just production, but human reproduction, comes from Chairman Mao himself. And, of course, that idea was acted upon when I was in China. When the order came down that everyone was to stop at one child. And women who were pregnant with a second and third or fourth child were arrested. Arrested for what crime, you say? Well, they were arrested for the crime of being pregnant without the permission of the government. The Family Planning Organization had not given them permission to have a second child or a third child, and so their unborn child was illegal. Women were arrested for that crime. They were locked up for that crime and told that they would be held in the lockup until they consented to an abortion. I use the word consented advisedly because they didn't have anything resembling consent. They were told on no uncertain terms that at the end of the day, whether they consented or not, they would be taken to the abortion clinic and forcibly aborted. And that's what happened in my presence, in my sight. Women 7, 8, and 9 months pregnant were taken to the abortion clinic under guard, forced down on the operating table, given a lethal injection into the unborn child, and then a cesarean section was performed, removing the dead or dying baby out from the mother's body. Following that, if the baby was still alive, it was killed by lethal injection through the fontanelle, the soft spot into the brain. That resulted in almost instant death. And the mother would then be sterilized. Her fallopian tubes would be cut because they didn't want her violating the law again by conceiving another child. That went on for 36 long years. It's still going on today in parts of China. In a kind of strange reversal, the Chinese Communist Party is now targeting minorities while encouraging people of Chinese extraction, Han Chinese extraction, to have more babies on the one hand. They're telling Tibetan women and Uyghur women in the far west that they should have fewer children. Women in the far west of China, what the Chinese Communist Party calls Xinjiang, but we should probably call Eastern Turkestan because for thousands of years it was a separate country. There, women are still being arrested for the crime of being pregnant with a second or third or fourth child. They're still being forcibly sterilized in an ongoing campaign of what I believe to be genocide. In fact, what Mike Pompeo, whom I've talked to about this, declared on his last day in office to be genocide. China is killing now entire peoples in China under a program to sinicize everyone. Everyone in China is to become Han Chinese. They're to stop speaking their native language, whether it be the Manchu language, the Mongol language, the Tibetan language, the Turkish language of the far west. They're all to only speak Han Chinese. They're all to only worship the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, who now is Xi Jinping himself. So Mao, the biggest mass murderer in human history, is the progenitor of all the evil that we see in China today, and is the direct model for Xi Jinping, who is also doing things that remind me of Chairman Mao. The evil that is China, though, did not all originate in China itself. The idea for population control, of course, came from the West. It came from our own minds. It came from the Club of Rome in Rome, Italy, in the early 1970s, when they commissioned a study called The Limits of Growth, which said that the population of the world should be reduced to about 1 billion people. One of the authors of The Limits to Growth recently said, "We are still working towards that goal of reducing the population of the world to 1 billion people. The question in my mind is, what are they going to do with the rest of us?" These are people who, when they saw China embark upon the one-child policy back in '80, applauded because they thought China was going in the right direction, which is to say, in the direction of reducing the human population. How do you reduce the human population? Well, you call upon the four horsemen of the apocalypse, right? You call upon plagues. Well, we had a plague not very long ago. We might have others. We call upon war. There are conflagrations breaking out in the Middle East. There's an ongoing war in Ukraine, and we may be facing before the end of the year a war over Taiwan. Since Xi Jinping has said that issue is to be resolved before the end of the year, I think he means before the next election, in which Xi Jinping has not endorsed Donald Trump. And of course, you have other. The march of death continues. War, plague, famine. Famine, we may be facing famine in parts of the world if the Green Movement is successful in reducing the use of fossil fuels, if the Green Movement is successful in forcing us to use glorified golf carts instead of gasoline-powered engines, if the Green Movement is successful in stopping farmers from using fertilizer, the agricultural production will go down by half. There's already famine in parts of the Middle East because of the fact that Ukrainian grain production is down. I do not believe that all of these things that we see approaching are happening by chance. I believe that the population controllers who would like to see the population of the world reduced to 1 billion or even less applaud these sorts of things. They're behind the Green Movement. They're behind the denying us access to energy. The plagues? Well, you need to know that we funded the biolab in Wuhan, and we funded other biolabs in China and in Ukraine that were working on developing coronaviruses using gain-of-function research into dangerous bioweapons. We also provided the technology for the lab in Wuhan to develop from a harmless bat virus the coronavirus, the flu that we all got and survived, most of us. Not all of us survived the vaccine. Most of us survived the flu. We funded that project because basically we outsourced the production of bioweapons to China and Ukraine. And you might say, why would we do that? Why would the Pentagon and the CIA outsource the production of bioweapons to Ukraine? Well, because and China, because we signed a bioweapons convention in the early 1980s that forbid us from developing bioweapons. So we nominally abided by that provision by exporting the process of investigation to places like Ukraine and China. We, at the same time, were developing, you know, mRNA vaccines to protect ourselves against these bioweapons. You all know the result of that little scheme. There is today a march going on at the University of North Carolina to a lab run by Ralph Baric, who was the one who taught the chief virologist of China, Dr. Shizhong Li, how to use gain-of-function research to develop coronavirus bioweapons. They're going to march on his lab and demand an end to gain-of-function research, which is to say demand an end of the creation of dangerous viruses in the lab that might escape to harm us. I hope they succeed. But behind all this, behind the evil of China, driven by the godlessness and the atheism of Chairman Mao and currently Xi Jinping, are other organizations like the World Economic Forum. We have the chief advisor to Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum, Yuval Harari, saying that we need to reduce the population of the world to just a few million people, because he said we're going to be able to replace most of the people in the world with machines in the years to come, that robots and artificial intelligence will render most of us, he considers us to be useless meat machines, redundant. He said, and why would we want to have so many human beings running around when artificial intelligence and robots could do the job more efficiently and with fewer complaints than human beings? He does concede that we might want to keep a few million human beings around, or maybe only a few hundred thousand, of the people who are doing cutting-edge, you know, technological research. He has in mind, of course, that he would be among the select. They always do. What are they going to do with the rest of us? Well, it's population control. It's abortion, uber alles. It's abortion for all, for everyone. It's putting young women on contraception as soon as they reach puberty. It's encouraging young women to think they cannot be truly free unless they have the right to kill their unborn children. It's developing dangerous viruses. It's encouraging war. It's discouraging the use of fossil fuels. This world, of course, was designed by God to be a cornucopia of resources. Resources that, as our needs and numbers grew, we would unlock with our creative, God-given intelligence to make our lives better. In fact, that's been the whole course of human history. As our numbers have grown, we have devised new ways of producing more and better goods at a cheaper price. Today, with over 8 billion people on the planet, humanity's living standard is higher than ever before. Lifespans are longer than ever before. There is more human life on the planet than ever before. God's plan to use God's green earth to bring souls into existence, to allow humanity to be fruitful and multiply, has succeeded and is succeeding. And yet there are those, like Chairman Mao, like the people at the World Economic Forum, like the population controllers, the radical greens, who hate humanity, who are disgusted by us and by our numbers, and want to reduce our numbers by any means possible. They're the ones who applauded China's one-child policy. They're the ones who continue to promote abortion in the United States and around the world. They're the ones who use over $1 billion in our taxes to promote abortion in countries in Latin America and Asia and Africa against the will of the American people. Yesterday, I held a press conference talking about some of the activities that the USAID PEPFAR program was engaged in Africa. PEPFAR is a $10 billion project. The acronym for which, PEPFAR, stands for the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Reduction, PEPFAR for short. They always come up with these clever-sounding acronyms. As I say, billions of dollars are going overseas in this Emergency Plan for AIDS Reduction, which was put in place 20 years ago by President Bush. And the original idea of the program was that we're going to go in and, if people have HIV/AIDS, we're going to give them antiretroviral medications to extend their lives. Okay? And the other idea was we're going to go in and we're going to tell people who are HIV positive or living with someone who's HIV positive that, you know, they should use ABC, abstinence and being faithful, And then there was always this small C condoms at the end. You know, if you can't, then, yeah, here's what you do. Condoms always fail, by the way. USAID PEPFAR claims that condoms have a 98% success rate. Well, that's one incident, right? Let's talk about a couple who's having sex a couple times a week for over the course of years. What are your chances of one AIDS-positive partner using condoms sending AIDS to the other partner? Over time, it's 100%. Over time, it's 100%. Condoms fail. Anyway, that was the beginning of the program. It sounds high-minded, doesn't it? It sounds like a program that many Americans would approve. Well, PEPFAR is no longer about reducing the spread of AIDS. PEPFAR is now about reducing the fertility rate because the money has been hijacked by the population control movement. If you take PEPFAR funding today, you have to agree to projects that increase the contraceptive prevalence rate. What does that mean? Well, that means put all the girls on abortifacient contraceptives as soon as they reach puberty. If you take PEPFAR money today, you have to agree to increase the contraceptive mix. Well, what does that mean? If it means that condoms aren't enough, you have to put girls, not just teach them about condoms, male and female, you also have to give them Depo-Provera injections to chemically sterilize them for 3 months. Or you have to put implants in their arm to chemically sterilize them for 2 years, Implanon. Or you have to put an IUD in to cause early-term abortions of any children they might conceive in the years to come. That's what increasing the contraceptive mix means. So that's what happens to all of these government programs, however high-minded. Our foreign aid has been hijacked by the population control movement. We don't do what we should be doing anymore. We don't build roads or dig wells so people can have clean drinking water and stop their babies from dying from gastroenteritis and typhus and typhoid. Every project we have around the world has a population control element. And that's why every one of these projects should be defunded. The emphasis of our elites is on reducing the number of people in the United States and around the world. If you talk to the radical population controllers, they believe the carrying capacity of the United States is 100 million. Now, they're in a very peculiar position right now because, on the one hand, they're promoting abortion all over the country, along with sterilization and contraception. So they've driven down the American birth rate to its lowest in American history. At the same time, they're bringing in millions and millions of illegal aliens. I know I'm not supposed to use that term, but I think the White House is now calling them visitors. Yeah. Anyway, illegal immigrants. Why? Because they say that jobs are going begging, that we have a need for more workers. Well, so on the one hand, they're killing off a third of the next generation of American workers. On the other hand, they're saying we have too few workers and we need to bring in more from overseas. I don't think they're so much worried about bringing in workers as bringing in actual votes. And they are by the millions. So at the end of the day, these people would like to see, the elites, would like to see the rest of us disappear from the face of the planet. It's an odd thing. You know, you look at surveys of American elites, and let me define an elite as someone who graduates from Stanford University or Harvard, who's been miseducated and propagandized, who makes over $150,000 a year, who lives in or around a major city. If you ask the elites what they think about the pro-life movement, they think we're all radical extremists. They, of course, are in favor of abortion up to and beyond birth. The elites, many of them will tell you that they think that the decision whether or not to let a child live should not be made necessarily just before birth. No, you should wait until the baby is born and maybe learns to speak to decide whether or not it's truly human and allow it to live. This is what they've been taught in schools. The elite will say that the government is a solution to all of our problems, when we know that in many cases the government is the problem. The elite will say that Americans have too much freedom, which is a criticism I have only otherwise heard from Communist Party officials. When I was in China in the 80s and going back over the years and spoke with Communist Party officials, their constant complaint about the United States was that we enjoy too much freedom, you see, that if we simply had less freedom, we'd be happier. And, of course, that dovetails with the beliefs of the elites who are miseducated at our universities, high temples of secular humanism, I call them. And, of course, it dovetails with the views of the elites who attend the World Economic Forum, who want us to own nothing and be happy, to live in 15-minute cities, and, of course, above all, to have no children. So the devil in communist China is a cautionary tale of what may happen in the United States. You can't say decades to come. You can't even say years to come or months to come. The devil in communist China is a cautionary tale of what's happening in the United States right now, before our very eyes, with the rise of a class of politicians who have no sympathy, no empathy, really no understanding of what life is like for ordinary Americans, who have no loyalty necessarily to the country of their birth, who don't understand the meaning of the founding documents, which say, among other things, that all men are created equal and entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, who have discarded all those things in the reach for power and money. It is astonishing to me that, as someone who worked with President Reagan in the mid-1980s for the Mexico City policy, which forbid any U.S. funds from going to promote abortion overseas, or for lobbying for the legalization of abortion overseas, or for promoting abortion overseas in any way, who worked with him on cutting off funding to the UN Population Fund, that UN agency that was a cheerleader for China's one-child policy and was actually helping China impose its one-child policy on the Chinese people by helpfully providing, for example, computers to the State Family Planning Council so they could actually calculate how many babies should be born in every province, in every prefecture, in every county throughout the country. It helped them set the birth quotas. That was the UN Population Fund. We cut funding to the UN Population Fund because of its involvement with China. It's astonishing to me, after 4 years of the most pro-life president in American history, President Donald Trump, who put in place the most robust Mexico City policy that we have ever had in this country, and, of course, cut funding to the UN Population Fund. President Trump's Mexico City policy ensured that not $1 of U.S. funding would go to any organization or country overseas that was promoting abortion or lobbying for the legalization of abortion or performing abortions. That meant that it applied not just to the $1 billion in federal funding for population control, it applied to about $10 billion of funding. And that policy, by the way, the details of that policy were worked out by the president's director of domestic policy, who happened to be a graduate of Franciscan University of Steubenville here in Ohio. So you know what kind of the quality of the people. So in 3 short years, we've gone from having the most pro-life president in American history and the most pro-life policies to a president who, at his State of the Union address, all he talks about was promoting abortion, a so-called reproductive choice, again and again and again. He's proud, as a practicing Catholic, I guess, of the fact that he has made the abortion pill available at your local pharmacy on the corner so that anybody can walk in and buy it. He's proud of the fact that he's providing death by mail to girls in all 50 states by sending the abortion pill through the mail so that they can take the abortion pill without medical supervision. And then God knows what happens. There have been at least 16 deaths of young women who've taken the abortion pill and died from sepsis or hemorrhage. I believe the numbers are probably greater than that. That's what the CDC admits. He's proud of the fact that he has promoted not just abortion overseas, but he's actually funding campaigns to legalize abortion. He's proud of the fact that the PEPFAR program that I talked about has been compromised and corrupted so that it's now a population control program, so that girls as young as 10 are being given pornographic sex education and told about condoms and contraception, and even if they're not sexually active, in some cases have been contracepted with powerful steroid-based hormones that may cause lifelong infertility problems. He's proud of the fact that that some states have passed laws allowing girls to be taken. California is advertising in other states for girls to be brought to California for abortions. So we've gone from what was close to the best of all worlds, at least that I've lived in the United States in 40 years of being involved in the pro-life movement, to what is now the worst of all worlds. But still, we have hope. We have our faith, of course, which is a story of hope. But we also have a whole generation now of young people in the United States who, over the last 3 years, have seen the closest thing to radical Marxism in terms of policies that we've ever had in this country. And I think even some of those who were miseducated at our high temples of secular humanism at Harvard and at Stanford, where I was, I'm ashamed to admit it, even some of those who were miseducated are now being reeducated by real life. They have seen, I think, the consequences of these anti-life, anti-family policies. And hopefully enough of them will join with us in November to stop this ongoing experiment in socialism that is being carried out not just by President Biden, who probably doesn't know what day it is when he wakes up, but it's being carried out by the people in the White House, by the people at the second level, the assistant secretaries, the directors of various offices. They have been very, very astute in filling offices in the bureaucracy with their people all the way down the line and using the powers of government at the Department of Justice, at the FBI. All of the institutions have been dragooned into this process of imposing cultural Marxism, liberal progressivism on the United States as quickly as possible before the people of the United States wake up to what's actually happening. So we have in November one last chance to set things right. I believe we will have now a lot of young people who otherwise would have gone merrily along for another 20 years or so before real life would wake them up to the difficulties that socialism causes, joining us in this. I was surprised and happy to see that that most Americans under 30, voters under 30 in America, are now going to support the pro-life candidate rather than the candidate of abortion. So that's why this conference today is so very important. You will hear from Mark Houck, whose family was terrorized by an early morning raid by the FBI because he had the temerity, the courage to stand outside an abortion clinic and try to convince young women not to sacrifice their child to the abortion holocaust. You will hear from my friend, Our pastor from Canada, who's been arrested a couple hundred times for various crimes against the state, including being pro-life. And you will hear from Raymond Arroyo, our fearless voice on EWTN, who every week on the world over, you can count on him telling you the truth about what's happening in the world and within the church as well. So I'm glad you're all here. I'm glad to be here with you. I'll be here with you the entire weekend. And again, look forward to getting to know many of you personally. The clock is ticking. It's here in front of me in big red letters telling me I only have about 10 minutes left, and that's reserved for Q&A. But the clock is also ticking in another way. It's ticking on America. In November, that alarm is going to go off, and it will either go off in a way that we can celebrate because freedom will return to the United States and we will continue to make progress in defending innocent unborn human life, or it will go off and signal the beginning of the end for the United States. So there's a lot riding on this election, so I hope that everyone gets involved and stays involved and influences as many people as you can over the coming months for life. Thank you. Okay, the question is, how many universities in the United States have Confucius Institutes, and are the university administrators and academics aware of what a Confucius Institute is? What is a Confucius Institute? Well, it has very little to do with China's ancient sage, Confucius himself. They should properly be named Mao Zedong, German Mao Institutes, because they are propaganda organizations intended to, under the guise of teaching about the Chinese culture and history and language, are actually propagating the lies of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, as it happens, I testified way back in 2012 on a couple of occasions before the House Foreign Affairs Committee on the Confucius Institutes and recommended that they be shut down. Some universities have done that, but I believe that there are almost 100 Confucius Institutes still allowed to operate in the United States. And do the university administrators know what they do? Well, I'm not sure how much they care what they do.
You've been listening to Steve Mosher, an internationally recognized authority on China and population issues, an acclaimed author and speaker, and a 2024 presenter at the Bringing America Back to Life convention. Thank you all for joining me this evening. As I say goodnight and God bless each and every one of you, I'd like to close with the words of the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel. There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest.
From the Median is listener-supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life.
This program has been sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.